You did, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, so I knew that was going to happen. So I was fairly confident. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to watch that. I'm going to do something else with my life.
Smart man, Rob.
Yeah, well, we all do our part. Let me tell you, I am much more confident in knowing when my team is bad than when they're good.
Yes.
Generally.
I typically feel the same way, TBH.
Yeah. It's kind of easier to know if your team has, like, gotten lucky, essentially.
You know, in my continuing war against baseball, I haven't really kept up with the standings very much, but how are your Atlanta Braves doing?
Your war against baseball. You're leading the charge.
Yeah, proudly.
I mean, they've been like me on a Saturday morning. They're hungover.
Yeah.
for playing the World Series. But, I mean, yeah, the NL East is once again a garbage fire, except this time the Mets are actually good for how long remains to be seen. But for now, they've looked pretty good. And then everyone else is kind of crap. And the Nationals are, like, extra crap.
Oh, the Nationals have been hung over for, like, 3 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all their Twitter account posts about is the 2019 World Series.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah. When the Braves won the World Series in Houston, they were like, it takes a special team to win the World Series in Houston. I'm like, we're your division rival. Have some shame.
It's like, we don't like you.
Have some, like, I get no one likes the Astros or whatever, but have some shame.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, your D-backs aren't in last.
I know. You know, I actually did go to a game. One of my friends flew into town on business. He lives in Maui, but he flew in on business, so he was out here for a week, and we went to a D-backs game and then a Suns playoff game the next day. This was before they got annihilated by the Mavericks on home court.
Yeah.
Over the weekend. Yeah. We went to a D-backs Dodgers game. It's like, most times I go to see the Diamondbacks, it is like ostensibly against like the Dodgers or the Padres.
Yeah.
Like those are the only two opponents. Like probably 75-80% of the Diamondbacks games I've ever attended have been against some combination of the Rockies, Padres, and Dodgers.
I mean, which makes sense, you know, given the division.
Division but rivals.
I feel like I always see Braves-Phillies. I don't think I've ever seen Braves-Mets live. It's always the Phillies. I swear to God, it's always the freaking Phillies. Which is part of the reason why I hate them so much, I think. But, so it's just one of those things. I mean, you know, Mad Bum. He's still a thing.
He is, you know, and I watched a pretty good game that night. We had seats along the third baseline. I watched a well-pitched game, not by the Diamondbacks. It was Walker Buehler tossing a three-hit shutout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's pretty good at that guy.
Yeah, let me tell you, can take a look at Bumgarner's numbers this year.
Not bad. They're not bad.
No, you're not kidding. 2.29 ERA.
That's not bad.
He stayed upright.
Yeah. His arm is still attached to his body.
His FIP is a little high, but a 1.19 whip, that's not too bad.
No.
Yeah, and they're only a game under 500. I'll take it.
I mean, the division's really good.
Yeah, it is.
And the Rockies are, like, perpetually the stupidest team. But, you know, it's in the mix for fourth.
Yeah, what is Chris Bryant doing out there?
Oh, that now, let me tell you, I have not watched a single Rockies game. And I am a baseball addict, but I have not gone there. Oh, dear.
He doesn't have a home run yet.
Oh, dear.
How do you play in Colorado and not hit a single home run?
Oh, dear. Chris Bryant. Yeah, that's not good.
Oh.
That's real bad. No wonder they're bad. Yeah, all right, it all makes sense now.
Like the Rockies, like 1 year, they're going from we're going to rebuild, we're going to do this the right way, we're going to be patient, draft and develop, and then the next year they're doing stuff signing Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant. I don't get it. I don't get that franchise.
Insane. Yeah, baseball's weird. You know? Honestly, I can't really be mad about sports things for, I'm giving myself like 3 years essentially.
That's how long like the Braves elixir is going to take to wear off.
And dogs.
And the dogs. Can't forget about the dogs.
Yeah. I mean, five. I mean, probably more like five, honestly. I mean, I can't really be upset. I got two championships in like a few months. So.
Yeah, that's
no complaints.
I need you to do like the Paul Feinbaum caller accent for me.
You know, the thing about Feinbaum is that I've actually never really been a fan of call-in shows. I think they're, like, especially cringy.
Yes.
I'm not a fan of, like, cringe content in general, but I don't know how people listen to that, because the people that call into Feinbaum are so stupid. the dude that poisoned the trees at Auburn.
Yeah, I remember that.
When Cam was there, he called and he was like, "Hey, Paul, I just got to let you know something I did. I went down there and I poisoned Toomer's trees down on the corner." Like, you called in to Paul Feinbaum to snitch on yourself. What are we doing here? I mean, this is like next levels of Alabama going on there. I mean, you just got to be so... Oh, and what did he name his kid? His kid had... Oh, yeah, Alabama.
You got to be kidding.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, that was great. Love that. Really enjoyed that.
I'm just calling in Paul to let you know.
I committed a felony.
I have not hired legal counsel.
I did not think this out beforehand. I've drank 87 Miller Lights and, you know, we're just flying by the seat of our pants here.
I have a daughter, first name Aubrey, middle name Earn.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, Christ. It's just different. People live college football real different down there. I mean, you can attest to this as a lifelong Dogs fan.
Lifelong Dogs fan, yep. Someone that lives in Athens. I mean, it is like just next level. I mean, people love it so much, and I mean, I like college football. I think it's like easily the stupidest of like the major sports. Like, just dumb shit happens all the time, but it's funny. But these people are just like, come hell or high water, I'm rooting for the Dogs. Like, whether I logically know they're good or not, I'm just going all in.
Like, the Crimson Tide will either destroy me or validate my entire existence.
Yeah, exactly. That's why Mark Richt wasn't fired for like 7 years after he should have been. They're like, oh, he's a good man. He goes to church. He takes the kids to church. Never mind, we lose our three most important games of the year. He takes the kids to church, so we've got to keep him around.
He's a good football man and a good virtuous man.
That's right. Meanwhile, they like cut to Mark Richt, like they're getting pumped by Alabama, and he's just like listening to Christian music on the sideline. Like,
it's wholesome content.
That's what they want, man. It's what they want.
Yeah, it's just crazy, man. The stories that come out from like SEC fans, like whenever there's like a huge rivalry game. It's just crazy, some of the stuff that goes on. Like, just even like outside the Iron Bowl.
Yeah.
It's just nuts.
Yeah, I mean, even games like Georgia and Tennessee is like totally unhinged. And like for like the last several years, those two teams have not been, I mean, Georgia's been really good, but Tennessee has not been good in a long time, and their fans are so unhinged. They'll just do anything at this point.
My name is Johnny Knoxville, and this is Trying Out for Tennessee Football.
That's right. It might as well, honestly.
Yeah, the Vols haven't been good in ages.
Mm-hmm. No, they're not good.
Yeah, it's just been a while.
But it literally doesn't matter. Like, they still sell out games and stuff.
Josh Heupel's their coach now? Wow.
Oh, man, I couldn't tell you. They fired more coaches in the last several years.
Like, the last one I distinctly recall is Phil Fulmer.
I remember they hired Vince Dooley's son for some reason.
Derek Dooley, yeah.
Derek Dooley, yeah.
And they had Lane Kiffin for a little while, yeah. A little emphasis on little.
Oh, Lane, man. God, he don't get much more like college football ass head coach than Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, no joke.
His Twitter account's great.
Lane is he's out there. He's wilding out there.
Yeah, he is.
I love his Twitter account. Like, no other coach is just this unhinged.
and openly flirting with other teams.
Oh, sure, but the NCAA comes down on a good man like Herm Edwards and not Lane Kiffin. Okay.
Right, exactly.
I see how it is. Makes all our coordinators resign, all our players transfer. We lose our quarterback to LSU. We're going to go like 3-9 this year.
Oh, man. It's not looking good.
No, these are dark days for our Sun Devils.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. I'm sorry to hear it all, Herm, man. He's doing his best.
He is still there. Like,
why?
All of his coaches have left or been forced to resign, and he is still there.
That was so bizarre when he left media. I thought he was staying with media forever.
Well, his best friend is our AD.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, like Ray Anderson goes and Herm, they go way back. So Ray just hired him when Todd Graham wasn't getting the job done anymore. So now he just won't fire him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the other great thing about college football coaches. Like, at least used to, like, you have like one good season and you have a job for 20 years.
Oh, it's straight up nepotism.
Oh, yeah.
It is not at all a meritocracy.
Oh, no.
Not even close.
No, not in the least bit. I mean, I'm trying to think how many former head coaches were on Georgia's staff last year. There were a few. Like, oh, who was the guy? Oh, they had Matt Luke. Good old Matt Luke.
Oh, I remember that name, yeah.
And Will Muschamp.
Will Muschamp, he's the DC there, right?
Yeah. Yep. No, he was an analyst, and I don't know if he's going to take over because the DC got the Oregon job. Dan Lanning is now
because Cristobal went to Miami, yeah.
Yeah, and then they got Dan Lanning, which, good luck.
The Pac-12 is just going to be so bad this year. It's like really Lincoln Riley is going to hit the ground running with a 10-win team at USC. It's going to be terrible.
It's going to be really bad. I mean, I know that UCLA has to be sick.
Absolutely, like themselves vomiting.
Season. Yeah, they had a good season, but and then it's like, oh, USC is back. Okay, great. Awesome.
Yeah, and Oregon's been a solid program for a decade. They're going to be an also-ran.
Easy.
Yeah. U of A might be better than us in like 2 years. I'm just going to start vomiting when that happens.
I don't know what it is. The NCAA has beef with the Arizona universities. They're just trying to take y'all out.
I know, one coordinator at a time, one recruiting violation at a time.
That's right.
We got to reach out to these kids, man. There's a pandemic on. We're just trying to build a good football program.
Doesn't this kid deserve some money?
Exactly. That's exactly right. You too could work for ASU football, Rob.
That's right.
This is the party line that you're towing.
Yeah, exactly. I'd work. Could get some kids some money.
I was just reading I guess we have to talk about Atletico in just a moment, but I was just reading in The Athletic. I know you're not a hockey guy, but you know the Coyotes and ASU have an agreement for the Coyotes to use their hockey rink for like the next 3 years.
Yeah, I saw the pictures on Twitter. Yeah.
Apparently this agreement is contingent on Coyotes ownership not fooling around and finding out. Apparently, it is contingent on Coyotes' ownership behaving themselves and not generating any negative press. Oh, and ASU gets to use their logo at center ice when the Coyotes play in their 5,000-seat rink.
Oh, my God.
It's incredible.
Like a minor league team.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm going to try to find the article right now.
Oh, you have to go.
While we're talking. Oh, I know. Like, it's such a janky plan. Like, remember how we talked about like this is like Vitolo transfer, just transferred to the NHL.
Yeah.
This is how janky and harebrained this is.
I mean, that's so crazy. I mean, the Coyotes, it just seems to me, from, as you said, someone who is definitely not a hockey guy, like, now is about the time I start watching, because the playoffs are crazy and are fun to watch. But
oh, always.
I have no clue about anything, but it always seemed to me like the NHL was just being stubborn in keeping the Coyotes out there because they kind of screwed up whoever, giving that ownership group or whoever it was, that team. It's kind of the same thing that happened with the Thrashers. It's like, it's not that it was necessarily a bad idea. It's that the owners were so awful and just constantly screwed up at every turn that it was never going to work.
I loved the Thrashers, man. That's one of the great all-time logos.
The Thrashers, well, not only the Thrashers, we also produced the Flames.
You had the Flames, and they moved to Calgary. Y'all have lost two teams.
To Canada. Both Canada.
They both went to, yeah, Alberta and Manitoba.
Which, to be fair, makes more sense for Canadian City to have a hockey team. I'm not mad at it, to be honest. But, hey, at least we generated the cool logos.
That's true. And great uniforms.
Two cool teams. I mean, no one took on the Thrashers, obviously, but the Thrashers could have been cool. I mean, people went to those games early on.
They had some really fun players. Kovalchuk, Heatley, well, before Heatley got in legal trouble.
Yeah, well, and people, the thing is, people, I think, kind of assume, and fairly, that people didn't care. And people went initially, but then it was like, oh, this team's not very good, and they're not really trying to be good, so why should we go? And I think that was, it was kind of, the proof of concept was kind of proved by Atlanta United, like, several years later, that, like, this is also something that wasn't ever thought could succeed in the South, but then it did.
But it did, yep.
Immediately. They tried.
Like, immediately, like, Atlanta United was a hit.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think Atlanta's ever going to get a third chance at a hockey team.
No, but God, no. So, here's the headline. The Coyotes' agreement with ASU includes good behavior clause for team and its owner.
Oh, God.
The Arizona Coyotes and their owner, Alex Mariuolo, will be required to avoid notoriety, or the team could be forced to look for another place to play.
Avoid notoriety.
According to the document, if the Coyotes or their owner become the subject of adverse publicity, contempt, scandal, or ridicule for violating, quote-unquote, widely held principles of public morality, failing to conduct its business affairs with a high degree of integrity and honesty, and or failing to act as a good corporate citizen, Arizona State can get out of its deal with the Coyotes.
That feels very open-ended. That feels like the ASU.
It seems pretty arbitrary, does it not?
Yeah, and it feels like anything they could cut that deal off.
Oh, they can't have any betting like on the site either, because ASU, it's a college campus, and the rink is owned by ASU, so any gambling, like any FanDuel, DraftKings, etc. stuff has to be at least half a mile away. That's ASU rule. That's school
can
policy.
Can they sell beer at games?
Any alcohol or beer must be approved by ASU.
Oh.
ASU maintains the right to object to any advertisement that is not in good taste or otherwise not in compliance with the school policy. Arizona State will receive revenue from naming rights for the arena, not the Coyotes.
Oh my God.
The Coyotes will not be permitted to sell any temporary advertising that is a competitor or in the same category as whomever ASU sells naming rights to.
Oh, man. I mean, this team is like, why? Why is this team still a thing?
I don't know. They've been here my entire life. They moved here in 96, so I was 2 years old when they moved here. I have never been a Coyotes fan. I have, because most of my life they have played out in Glendale. They played in the West Valley, 25 miles from me. Mm. And, like, they've never been consistently good or well run because they have, it's an ownership carousel. And the commissioner of the NHL desperately wants them to succeed out here, but they're not going to.
Right, because it was his idea. Right?
Yeah, it was his idea to move them from Winnipeg down here.
Yeah, which was also a robbery. Winnipeg losing their team.
And Winnipeg eventually got that team back, courtesy of your Thrashers.
Yep, shut up. Shut up the Thrashers.
It's all connected, Rob. It's all cyclical.
It's all connected. I guess they'll just move them to, what's the place? Quebec City?
Quebec City.
Move them there.
Or give them to Saskatoon.
Yeah, somewhere like that. I don't know.
Medicine Hat. Like, there are a bunch of good Canadian, awesome Canadian cities.
I mean, you know, now that Seattle has a team, that kind of took an option off the table, because that was kind of always the easiest one, is just moving to Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Now the Pacific Northwest has a team, like that Seattle-Portland area, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and Vancouver has obviously always been there, so. Yep. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. Move them back to Atlanta. Yeah, Thrashers Part 3.
Third time is the charm.
Third time's the charm. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Fool me three times, it's Thrasher's time.
It's Thrasher's time.
We're back. whatever their slogan was, like Blue Nation or whatever.
Was that what it was? Blue, like Blue Nation?
It was Blue something.
That's kind of weak.
I never understood what it meant. What was it? Stupid blue thing. Believe in Blue Land, which I don't even know what that means.
No one calls Atlanta anything remotely close to that.
And the time period in which the Atlanta Thrashers existed, 1999 to 2011,
yeah,
the state of Georgia wasn't exactly blue.
No.
So
more like blood red.
Yeah, so I don't think that really makes any sense. I don't know what is blue about Georgia. Like, I mean, I guess we have the Atlantic Ocean, but it's not near Atlanta.
That whole march to the sea business during the Civil War.
I don't even know what that means. I never knew what it meant, but whatever. Whatever. Bring them back.
Yeah. I agree. I miss the Thrashers. They had some great looks, some great threads, great logo. Awesome.
Yeah.
Miss our Thrashers.
Terrible players.
You want to talk about Atletico or something?
Yeah, I guess we have to.
Yeah. I'm very much like just, I've been on this for like about a month now. I want this season to end.
Yeah.
It's been rough. I think Sunday's game kind of encapsulated a lot of what has gone wrong with this season and why I feel this way about this particular iteration of Atletico, Rob. I don't know if you felt the same or feel the same, but I mean, I'm not expressly looking forward to discussing this game. I don't really have much to say about it that I haven't already said this year.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
So,
it's nothing out of the ordinary for this year.
No, I mean, they took the lead in the first half. They played really well. Really happy that Jose Ma got a goal, his first of the year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, final 20, 25 minutes, they get tired. They drop back. Simeone throws on Felipe for, I don't know, ostensibly to protect the lead. He gets caught out, and the series scores, and it's 1-1. I do find it, I don't know if amusing is the right word, Sevilla's players tossing Lopetegui into the air as they clinch what is likely going to be fourth place.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, this clearly meant a lot more to Sevilla than it did for Atleti.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, I get it for them. They're in the Champions League, but I don't know. It just seemed kind of small time.
Yeah. Your words, not mine.
I mean, just saying. It. But honestly, is that unexpected? Not really. But, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of the way the whole season's been. There just hasn't been any spark with this team the whole year. They've never gotten going in any meaningful way. They'll have, like, a couple good results and then immediately go back to conceding late goals that drop them points and then back to square one again. So this season really just never got out of first gear, honestly.
Like, they're 9 wins, 2 draws, 2 defeats in the last 13 league games, which is about an 85-point pace over a standard 38-game season. Like, that's worth getting excited over. But other than the games in, around, and during the Champions League ties against the Manchester teams, I haven't really been very excited about Atletico during this calendar year.
No. Well, and it's there's obviously been the Luis Suarez problem in that he became old. He last season, as I think, I don't think was entirely unexpected, that last season was the last hurrah of him in Europe at the highest level. But he got old, he got hurt, and then the rest of the squad just couldn't really score goals outside of Angel Correa, and that's not going to get the job done, really.
And I think that we all kind of knew on some level that Suarez's second season at Atletico was going to be pretty different from the first. He's still our top scorer. Wildly, he is still our top scorer. We've had, you know, Zhao had a really good season. Correa had a really good season up until, like, March. Cunha's been a revelation. We've gotten goal scoring from a bunch of different sources, which is good, but Suarez has been pretty much a peripheral figure since December, and he's still this team's top scorer. And you had to bring him back, though, right? After last season, you couldn't just cast him aside like Barca did to him.
No, and I wouldn't ever question that decision or Yeah, I think it would just be revisionist history to say anything different. You had to get him this season to see if he still had anything left in the tank, and there's really nothing to lose.
No, I mean,
it's not like someone was going to pay big money for him in a transfer fee or anything. So,
like, I don't know what you think about this, but I think he's probably a club legend at this point, given how important he was to a league title win last year, just at Letty's third since 1977. 80-something games, he's scored 35 goals, maybe? That number might be wrong. But he was so important to us last year, and I don't know. I think he's got a very unique place in the club's history, despite only being here for 2 years.
I think unique is a good word, because he came in from Barcelona, and which always adds a little bit of flavor onto things, because they thought he was washed, and then he was just amazing in what was a really weird season, and basically single-handedly won Atleti the title. And also, it just so happened that, I mean, he was the first, like, he was the first world-class striker to perform at that level over the course of a season. I guess you can argue since Griezmann, but probably more closely Diego Costa.
Yeah, because of the player profiles.
Right, and that they won stuff. Mm-hmm. Won La Liga, more to the point. But
right.
So, yeah, I mean, legend, I think, you know, we get into the weeds on that, but he's going to be an iconic player for kind of a weird period of time. And the second Simeone title is going to be associated with Luis Suarez, for sure.
Oh,
no doubt about it.
He's the face of that team.
No doubt about it.
And I know there were a lot of heroes last year. Like, Oblak had maybe his single best season.
Yeah.
Lema exploded that season. Correa, Carrasco in the second half of the season. Hermoso was really good before reverting to being a pumpkin.
Marcos Llorente.
Llorente.
Unbelievable.
A dozen goals. He has none this year. So when you look at that team, but Suarez is the guy who scored all the important goals, and most of his goals were game winners. I mean, 21 goals, 11 of them were game winning goals.
And down the stretch too, when it got rocky, for sure.
Yeah, when it got rocky and Llorente lost form and João Félix got another ankle injury, it was really Correa, Carrasco carrying the team before Suarez scored against Osasuna and then again against Valladolid.
And that was it.
That was it. It was all she wrote.
Yeah, I think, you know, he'll certainly always be remembered, and he's probably going to make a lot of money in MLS, I guess, that we assume he's going to.
Yeah, I don't know where he's going. I'm not sure. Like, there's been some Ajax chatter on social media, which would be cool, like, sentimentally.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be cool. I'm not sure. I mean, Ajax is still a really good level.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like a great landing spot for a soon-to-be 36-year-old forward with bad knees and ankles.
No, I mean, I could see him going back to Uruguay, for sure.
Yeah.
But if he wants, like, a bag, which he probably does at this point, he could go to MLS and make a bunch of money. I'm sure some MLS team would want him.
Or he could go to Aston Villa.
Yeah, that Stevie G
coached
reunion
tour. Coached by Stevie G, yes.
Stevie G reunion tour, him and Coutinho back together. Oh, man.
The Stevie G aura.
Yeah, I mean, if this was the old days, like if this was like 2017, he would have already been announced as going to China.
Yes.
For like the most amount of money you've ever seen in your life.
But no one's going there anymore. Or Japan.
No. Yeah, true. True.
As Iniesta went there, Torres went there for a year.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he could go to, like, Dubai or something, or so the Saudi Arabian League if he, like, really wanted a bag.
Yeah. Like, and Gabby went to Qatar. Similar deal.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I don't... This may just be... it is totally me just projecting onto Luis Suarez. I don't see Luis Suarez becoming a coach.
It's tough for forwards because they have a relatively this is going to sound like denigrating, but it's not. Like, they have a narrower view of the game than a midfielder or a defender, especially a central midfielder.
And you kind of want your forward to be selfish.
Yes.
Like, that's what makes a forward great, which kind of limits your ability as, like, a team leader or whatever. So, yeah, I don't really see him going into coaching.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So he might as well just go whoever gives him the most money, to be honest.
Here's a question for you. Speaking of last year's team, obviously we've been through almost now 10 Diego Simeone teams.
Yep.
10 years of Cholo, at least full seasons at Atleti. What are the, let's say, two or three best Atletico Madrid teams under Diego Simeone?
Oh, that's a great question.
I was thinking about this the other day just while I was writing for work.
I mean, obviously 13-14 is going to be number one.
Yeah.
I think.
Totally fair.
You know, I mean, the other Champions League final team, I never thought was that good. I think they were kind of more fluky than they were, like... I feel like, I mean, they were good, but their run, I feel like, was kind of less convincing than the 13-14 run. So I'd kind of almost say 12-13, which is kind of crazy, but that was kind of like the prototype for 13-14.
Mm.
So I'll always have, like, nostalgia for that team, because that was sort of the building block. And I think the Europa League winning team was really good. Should have been better, honestly.
17-18.
Yeah, should have been better. I think that's the takeaway from that team, is they should have been better. But, yeah, and then I guess, I mean, it's weird, actually. I'm going to be interested to see how in a few years we look back on last year's title team, because it was weird how it came together. It was kind of unexpected that team gelled as well as they did. And they were amazing. Like, they were truly amazing to watch. And then it fell apart the year after. So you're kind of left wondering, like, what the hell happened that year? You know? So I'm going to be interested how we'll look back on that team. Yeah, what do you think?
That's a good point about last year's team. I don't think that story is fully written yet, no. As this season has shown us, because it's pretty clear now that a few of those guys performed out of their skins to help us get 50 points out of the first 19 games that season. Like, Hermoso has not come close to rediscovering that level. Llorente has not come close to rediscovering that level. Lemar, Carrasco have had inconsistent seasons. Lemar's had injuries. Savage has been more injured this year than he was last year. Oblak has had a, by his standards, a dismal season, whereas they all performed so great in the 2020-2021 campaign. So I guess next year will be a really good barometer, because I don't think Atleti are quite as good as they were last year, but they're not nearly as bad as the level they've shown this year. So it's kind of inconclusive for how we rank that last year's title winning team, even though that honor is winning the league is probably the single biggest trophy a domestic team can win, right? Winning the league, yep, to me is more impressive than winning a Champions League. You have to grind 38 games, 9 months. You don't fluke your way to a league title.
Nope. Like, table doesn't lie.
Some teams can fluke their way to 5th, 6th, 7th. Like, I remember Newcastle doing that 10 years ago under Pardew.
Yeah, true.
You know, and Levante had a year where they were 6th about a decade ago. Getafe had a 5th-place finish under Bordalas. Like, there are certain seasons where you can catch fire at the right time and finish in European place, but to win a league, no, you got to be legit. You got to be real good.
And I guess the ultimate outlier on that is, this is going to sound very disrespectful, but is Leicester. Leicester is kind of like the ultimate outlier. It's not like they were a bad team. Like, they obviously have world-class players on the team, but it also coincided with every other good team in England
having a bad season.
Crap.
Yeah.
So it takes something that is a once-in-a-generation occurrence for that to happen. So the vast majority of the time, to win the league is the hardest thing to do. And you know, the Champions League final teams, you know, I guess you could make the argument that with the way Athletic play, you're kind of rolling the dice in knockout competition. That's what we talked about after Man City is,
yep,
you know, they were set up knowing that the result that happened was possible and maybe even likely, but if you rolled the dice enough times, that would have come out good eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably their best chance. So, I, you know, I think it's 13-14 at the top of the Simeone teams without question. I don't think it's anywhere close, really.
I've got 15-16 at the top.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
We let in 18 goals that year in the league, dude. 18 yeah. goals in 38 games. We were insane defensively. Griezmann was one of the three best players in the world that year, scored 32 goals in all comps. We had a plus 45 goal difference in the league with less than half a goal conceded per game. Oblak was ridiculous. That was probably Godin's best individual season beyond 13-14 when he scored in the league-winning game and the Champions League final. Godin was unreal that year. Felipe comes back, and he plays at a world-class level. That was probably Juan Fran's best season, probably Gabby's best season. Sal stepped into the team and was a revelation. And Griezmann, despite not having a consistent strike partner the entire season, still scored 30 goals. Like, he starts the year with Jackson Martinez. He goes from Jackson to Vieto and then finally to Torres, who is good enough, who does a bit more than an impression of a lamppost and actually supports him in the forward pair. And I think our bench that year was really good, too. We had depth at both fullback positions. Augusto comes in at the start of the January window and beasts it, particularly in the Champions League. Man, before Augusto got hurt, he was a terrific defensive midfielder.
I mean, but the fundamental problem with that team is that the transfers that were brought in were so bad that if they had been slightly smarter about how they spent money that summer, then I agree with you, that team probably would be the best. But I mean, there were just no, outside of Griezmann, there were no goals in that team.
I kind of think that's what makes it even better, right? You waste $60 million on Jackson and Vieto, and you're still good enough to rack up 88 points in the league and come within an eyelash of winning the European Cup.
I think you saying that is, I bet Simeone would also say that was the best team, because that's what he wants. He just wants the, like, dog defensive team. And that, I mean, that was absolutely what that team was operating at full capacity defensively.
Yeah.
But, man, goals were hard to come by in that team.
Like, that was a time where if Atleti scored first, the game was over. That was it.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter when they scored, whether it was in the third minute or the 93rd minute. If they scored, it was probably over. Because our defense was just that good. Our system was that strong. And we had guys like Gabby and Godin who did not ever let the standards slip. Ever. We haven't had leaders like that since. Like, I love Koke to bits. I love him to pieces. I think he's a good captain. He's not Gabby.
No. Definitely not. I don't think anyone would.
He'd probably agree, honestly.
Oh, of course he would.
Knowing the kind of guy Koke is, he'd probably agree.
Well, the reason I think 13-14 is more impressive is because that was the last Atleti season that the team didn't have money like that. Like, yeah. They were scrounging around behind couch cushions to get guys in January.
Yeah, that's why they're number two for me. They won a league that was, and 8 years ago today, actually, Rob. How amazing is that? Eight years ago today is when Godin scored the header at Camp Nou to win us the title.
That was a good day.
Yeah, that was an amazing day. And that was my second season following Atletico. My first one where I was really, really locked in and paying attention week in, week out. It was an insane season. That was a great title race to follow. And, like, I think the argument for them being the top Simeone team is pretty convincing, right? 90 points. They won the league in an era where Madrid and Barcelona were routinely racking up 100 points, 100 goals scored. There was really no competition for them. Like, there was one year where Valencia were third but finished 30 points behind whoever it was to finish second. I think it was Madrid to finish second that year. They finished 30 points behind second place. So what Atletico did that year was really, truly break up the duopoly. And yeah, you're right. They didn't have any money, right? In that January, we had to bring back Diego Ribas on loan. He was at Wolfsburg, right? And then we went to, we scrounged and found Jose Sosa out of really nothing.
Yeah.
And Jose Sosa was a huge contributor for us in the second half of the season.
Well, and Diego Ribas scored what is that still banger. To me one of the most ridiculous goals I've ever seen in my life. It still doesn't make any sense. Yeah, I mean, that team was just, it was weird. It was full of, it was a mix of young players and journeymen that had been around. And, you know, you think about Courtois, who, you know, don't really enjoy him very much now, but whatever you have to say about him, he's been one of the best goalkeepers in the world for quite some time.
This entire time, yeah.
Nearly a decade. Yeah, I mean, and he was a baby on that team.
He wasn't even our player. There was concern when we drew Chelsea in the semifinal that year. There was concern he wasn't going to be able to play because he was still on loan from Chelsea.
Which, given who the manager of Chelsea was at that time, I'm shocked. Shocked that he played. And also considering that summer before that season, their best player was sold.
Ewing theory.
And for real.
That's all that is.
But still, to lose inarguably, your best player, basically not reinvest the money at all, and then win La Liga, is insane.
Yeah, the final fee for Falcao was inflated too. It wasn't 60 million. It was much closer to 40 million.
Yeah, but there was weirdness going on
because Monaco at that time were just buying everybody.
And there was the third-party ownership back then.
Before FIFA banned it.
Mm-hmm.
So Falcao goes. We signed David Villa for, an eighth of the final price for Falcao? For 5 million euros?
Yep.
David Villa comes in and did this go to work. I think they won their first 7 games that season. It was crazy. They beat Madrid at the Bernabeu, and that was when I thought, they were going to be seriously good this year.
That game was so sick.
That was great. Costa gets a goal in the first 10 minutes or so.
And it was over.
points to his face.
Oh, man. So good. So good.
They had Rulo as well. And Rulo and Falcao are, they're just about joint tied for my favorite Atleti player of the last 10 years.
Yeah. And that was the peak of Arda Turan.
Arda. Yeah.
Just running his brains out. No wonder he fell off for Barcelona. But yeah, no, like you said, the argument is that the two best players of this generation easily and of all time probably were in La Liga in their prime at that time and could not beat this weird Atleti team.
Yeah, that was another a little bit like Leicester, right? Luck, opportunity, and just from top to bottom, that squad competed week in, week out.
My guy Tata was not Barcelona quality. love him to death, but no.
Atlanta United legend Tata Martino.
Easy Atlanta United legend. Not so much a Barcelona.
Not a Barca legend, no.
No, probably not.
Man, I loved that team. And that was just, I was there for the ride, right? I was still pretty new to following this sport and pretty new to how every competition worked and what player roles were. I wasn't a novice, but I was pretty dang close. I'd only started following the sport within the previous 12, 18 months. So I was still kind of feeling my way around and watching Atleti do something that practically everyone I was listening to was saying, this is not supposed to happen. This is practically impossible what they're doing. That just made it even more exciting. How far can this go, right? They beat Barca in the quarterfinal that year. This is their first Champions League semifinal since 1974. It wasn't even called the Champions League then. This is pretty dang impressive. First time in 40 years they're doing this. So it was just, that was a magic carpet ride. How far can this go? That was where Simeone takes charge of this team and you just feel like anything is possible.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that was kind of an iconic season to me, 13-14 in general, because I had followed Arsenal for a long time before that, which, you know, watching soccer in America is like a brutal experience.
Especially prior. Back then, all we had was Fox Soccer.
Fox Soccer was horrible, and you had to pay a ton of money to get access to, you know, watching games regularly, which thank God for my granddad, he did. But, you know, and that season was just iconic because that was, I think, 13-14 was the first year the Premier League was on NBCSN,
yep,
which was amazing. And then also the other weird memory I have from that season, which is like semi-Atleti adjacent, not really, but that Copa del Rey final, the Gareth Bale goal,
mm-hmm,
which I remember just being like a Twitter meltdown. Because that Gareth Bale goal is still ridiculous.
Like, objectively ridiculous. Like, putting my Madrid anti-Madridista bias aside, that was just insane. That goal was one of a kind.
I mean, that's probably, like, you know, one of the most physically talented footballers to ever live. Like, full tilt. It was unreal. Yeah. I mean, it was just a weird season. Like, weird shit like that just happened. And Atleti won the title. Real Madrid bought Gareth Bale. Barcelona had young Neymar, and it did not matter.
I remember that was, I think, 2012-13. I was scrolling through the channels trying to find some football to watch, and I couldn't even watch, like, a Man City-Tottenham game live. City were the reigning champions. I couldn't watch that live. I had to watch, like, a replay at 3 in the morning on Fox Soccer to go.
It was so bad.
That's what the landscape was back then. I don't know how many of our listeners have been watching soccer or football in the U.S. for 10 years, 5 years, 2 years, however many years. But it was, the landscape was really barren. Like, the landscape was really tough.
It was slim pickings, and it was, you know, it's like a menu at a bad restaurant. Like, there's not much on it and nothing you want. You know, it's like random FA Cup matches that you're like, why the hell would I ever watch this?
Like, and I could watch Stoke City and Man United on, like, Fox Sports Arizona, now Bally Sports Arizona, but I could watch it on Fox Sports Arizona at 12:30 in the afternoon, but that was it. I didn't know what, like, our soccer streams was.
No, yeah, the bootleg streams in those days were much more bootleg somehow.
Much more.
they were like 240p and took a year to load, and you had to click through 90 porno ads to even, like, get anything.
And my favorites to this day, and they still do this, my favorites are the ones that refuse to show you the match, like, unless you disable your ad blocker. Really? Like, that's not suspicious.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I wonder what that's about. Oh yeah, these guys illegally streaming a match. Yeah, I'm sure you have my best interest at heart.
I think I'm gonna keep my ad blocker on. Thank you though. Appreciate you. Respect.
But yeah, it the landscape now is so much better. Weirdly, I thought about this not too long ago because I think The Athletic had some, like, soccer in America fan survey about coverage, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna bitch about how CBS has, like, kind of weird commentators and, like, ESPN has, like, janky streaming. I was like, you know what, it's actually fine. Like, compared to what it used to be, this is fine. I'm really not that upset about it.
It's just so much better than when we started watching, because now we have, you know, Paramount Plus, ESPN. Like, we can criticize ESPN and their analysis, their broadcasters, whatever, but the fact that La Liga now has that exposure, just that it's readily available for pretty much anyone if you pay $6 a month.
It was huge for me for it to not be on BN, because I could never get BN.
Oh god, yeah.
Even if I wanted to.
Full respect to the people who worked at BN, I just don't like your rights deal. I'm sorry.
And it's hard to get the access to their thing. Like, you have to be in certain areas, essentially. Yeah.
And it was only available on Sling or Fubo.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I was a broke college student and did not have, so I was using that college Wi-Fi for some bootleg streams, baby.
Who among us?
Everybody, hopefully.
I remember watching, you mentioned the 17-18 team. That's probably my number three team, given how inconclusive last year's team is in the ranking. I remember watching Griezmann's 4-goal game against Leganés, sitting at Memorial Union on the downtown Phoenix ASU campus. I was sitting in, now it wasn't even a reclining chair, it was kind of a shit quality chair. But I was sitting there just watching Griezmann banging goals against like an ace. Like on ASU's Wi-Fi. Whenever, like, I visit my dad every weekend, and when I drive into downtown Phoenix and then I drive out, and when I reach one of the old ASU buildings, my phone pops up with a notification saying, "You want to connect to ASU Wi-Fi?" And like, oh, that takes me back. First of all, it's creepy. My phone still remembers this. That Apple right. still keeps this memory, this data stored. But second, oh, I remember those days watching Atleti streams in class or watching Atleti play with B in commentary at MU.
Remember when we drew twice with Karabag that year? That was great.
You know, I got to thank Karabag, because without them, we wouldn't have won the Europa League.
I guess.
I got to thank them. Those games in the moment, in a vacuum, were immensely irritating and angering.
They were horrible. They were so bad.
I wanted to strangle some of our players. But without, like, the second Karabag game, where our only goal is Thomas scoring a rocket from, like, 40 yards, we had, like, 35 shots and one goal. Without that game, we don't win a trophy that year.
No.
And we don't get to beat Madrid in the Super Cup.
Do you remember the pitch at Locomotive?
Yes.
Remember how gnarly the pitch was? That sticks in my mind forever because it looked so cold.
It was so snowy.
So plastic. Yeah.
And the pitch was so bad, and there was an orange ball, and it was just bouncing.
It was hard. You could tell how hard the surface was.
Yeah, I remember Felipe breaking his leg that day.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
But yeah, that season, the first half of that season was desperate. Atleti were so bad the first half of that season. Because they couldn't make transfers, and Griezmann wasn't really locked in. He wanted to leave the club. There was an agreement with Man United. Everybody knew that, but he stayed because of the transfer ban. He wasn't focused. The team wasn't playing well. But you know, then January comes in, and things change. Costa comes in. There's a lot of energy. Vitolo comes in, too. And Atleti end up finishing second and winning the Europa League with a really, really convincing run throughout that tournament. Like, that's a rare feeling as an Atleti fan to be in that tournament, an international continental tournament, and know you're the best team, and know that if you don't win it, it will be a tremendous failure. It's a really weird position to be in.
I remember being unnecessarily, well, maybe not unnecessarily, given how their careers have turned out, but upset about the... You and I were upset a lot about the Teo Hernandez stuff, and yeah. also the Diogo Jota stuff. That happened that summer, too, so we were, like, coming into the season already kind of annoyed that this stuff had happened, and then they were kind of not very good, and it was like, well, shit, here we go.
Yeah, that summer was really rough, because we were on a transfer ban.
It was, yeah. And,
you know, we did that, the now infamous Vitolo podcast, where it's 9 in the morning, I'm just waking up, I check Twitter, and it's like, are you kidding me? And that's when I messaged you, and like we spend that half an hour podcast, and I'm basically just grumbling. Like, it's more I'm tired than mad, but I was also mad. And then lo and behold, they end up signing him.
I really need to re-listen to that, because I have not done that.
Oh, you should. I re-listened to it, I think, a couple of times in the intervening seasons. It's great. I was sitting in my bedroom in my apartment in Tempe when I had a roommate in Tempe.
I would love to. I can't even remember, because it must have been like early afternoon, I guess.
It was about 9 a.m. my time, which would have been 11 or 12 your time based on daylight savings.
Oh, man. I bet I got to re-listen to that, because I'm sure I was just like... Because I don't think I was that upset about it in the moment, because then like 48 hours later, he signed for us, right?
Yeah, because he didn't sign Sevilla's contract. That was what they presented him with, a contract right. extension. He never signed it.
And they were like, oh, he's not for sale, and we had blown it. And then he ended up being like one of the worst purchases
ever. ever. So in the club's history, and he's still technically contracted to us.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. His contract's still not done. It's done after this year, yeah.
Do you want to... No, they extended it to send him on loan to Getafe.
Oh, good Lord. Great. Excellent.
Do you want to know... Do you want to guess, Rob, how many starts Vitolo has made for Getafe this year?
Oh, my God.
Do not Google it.
Three.
Lower? Yeah.
One?
One start.
I mean, that tracks.
Here are Vitolo's stats this year. Are you ready for these?
I'm ready.
For Getafe's side, which just secured safety last weekend, he has played 7 games in La Liga. 1 start, 221 minutes. No goals, no assists. 1 shot.
You don't say.
I do say.
Wow. Oh, man.
He has completed 1. Count it, 1. Pass traveling longer than 30 yards.
Wow. Look at you, Vitolo. Man, keep getting them checks, I guess.
He is getting those checks.
Remember when we loaned him to Las Palmas and we were like, oh, it's going to be fine. He and Diego Costa, they're going to come in January and they're going to be totally ready to go.
It was terrible.
And then they were both crap.
Like, Vitolo's best moment that season was when Cholo gave him a surprise start in a derby and he set up a goal for Griezmann.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because he was otherwise hurt or just kind of eh.
And Costa was so bad. We spent so much money bringing back Diego Costa. Oh. He was so bad.
I was so convinced he was just going to bang in the goals, man. I was so convinced that this was the missing piece, man. But you are never one player away. In any sport, you are never just one player away.
No, if you're telling yourself that, then you're papering over cracks more than likely. Yeah.
I mean, Costa had some very good moments in that calendar year. Like, he scores on his debut. Who were we playing? It was Yeda, I think, in the cup. He comes off the bench and scores.
Yes.
He has that goal against Arsenal in the semifinal. That was a great moment. Not for you, but for Atletico, that was a great moment.
Yeah.
It was a strange moment for you, given your loyalties. Was. And then he has that brace in the Super Cup against Madrid that gets us to extra time, and we eventually win in extra time. Everything beyond that was just a train wreck.
Well, I mean, Diego Costa, it should be the Diego Costa rule, because I feel like in football there are two rules, which are, one, you should never buy a player from Atletico that played under Diego Simeone. And two, you should never buy a player from Chelsea because you're getting hosed, yes, more than likely.
Chelsea may not be good at buying players themselves, but they are excellent at knowing when to get rid of them.
And Diego Costa was both of those things.
Yes, yeah. Antonio Conte got the last. He got the last drops out of Costa.
He did, and teams shouldn't buy it players from those clubs because they're real bad.
Yeah, like there aren't very many success stories of guys who have left Simeone's Atletico. Like you can attest to this, Rob. Rulo, yeah. Athletic is unique because it's because of all the pride and because of the regional pride and their Cantera policy, their Basque only policy. Rulo is probably the prime example. Rodri's probably going to get there, although his first 2 years at City weren't easy.
True.
And you can't
count Teo.
Not really, because he had to go to 2 other teams before making it at Milan.
Yeah.
You can't really count Jota or Raul Jimenez either.
No, definitely not.
Because those guys took multiple seasons to find their footing, although Jota now has, to my chagrin. And you can attest to this as an Arsenal fan, Rob, with what's been going on with Thomas Partey.
Yeah. I mean, I see the thing is, it's not just that you were like attached to Atleti, it's that if you played a lot under Simeone, which Roger only played for 1 season, but yep, if you played a lot of seasons like Tomas did or like Arda Turan did,
especially Arda,
that's a lot of miles.
Because it's such a difficult, it's a physically intense style, especially in the Champions League, especially against bigger opponents where Atletico are clearly the underdogs. Like, you know how much running you have to do, how much mental and physical toll it takes. Like, there's a reason Saul has not played at Chelsea.
Oh, man.
You know, just another recent example of Saul going to Chelsea and Atleti finally pulling one over on Chelsea, although not really in the way you'd want.
No, because they're not going to keep him.
No, he's going to come back, and I'm not really sure what they're going to do with Saul. I think there's... On one hand, they could look to move him on. On the other hand, they could look to reintegrate him.
I think they probably will reintegrate him.
Well, I mean, it's Andrea Berta, the sporting director, comes out yesterday and says, like, the era of the really big, expensive signings is, for the time being, over. We believe in this squad. We want to keep this squad together. These players have value, and several of them have bright futures. that's what's important to us. We're going to have to wait for the market to develop. So what does that tell you about what Atleti are going to do this summer?
Well, I was interested in his quotes about Griezmann as well, because like we were talking about with Costa, you know, he's a guy that left Atleti and then came back and has not been very good since returning. But it seemed from Berto's press conference that that move's happening regardless. And now I don't know if him saying, like, oh, we're happy with him, we want to keep him, whatever, whether that's just there's no way to get out of that obligation to buy him, or whether they actually think that he is a long-term piece for the squad, which if the latter is the case, then I am concerned.
Yes, as am I. I am rather concerned if that is the case. I mean, I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago now, that they should probably send Griezmann back if they want to plan in the best way for the medium to long term, but they're not going to. It's Griezmann and Simeone have a very tight bond, and that's just, it was an express request from Cholo. That's the way it goes. And what they can try to do is maybe send Morata there, because Xavi inexplicably wants Morata. You could send Morata there and try to knock down that obligation to buy, that fee. Like, not cancel it entirely. Barca won't agree to that. But if you give them Morata at a discount fee or a nothing fee, and in exchange you say, instead of paying 40 million for Griezmann, how about we pay 20 million? That strikes me as a little bit better.
You can still not great, but it's a little better.
You can rationalize it a little bit better. Like, Griezmann is not, if this season's any indication, he's not aging well. He's probably going to become a deeper lying forward or even a midfielder next year, which is fine. I think that role can work. He could have value in it. I don't know how much, though. The value is going to have to come from him setting up 8 to 10 goals, and I'm not sure if he's going to do that.
No. And, you know, again, like we talk about, he may only be 31, but that's a hard 31. He was playing every match for Simeone.
And he never,
for 5 years.
Never got hurt.
Never got hurt. He played 5 years, every match, every competition for Simeone. That is going to take its toll on your body.
Yeah. Like, look at what's happened to Koke this season.
Yep.
Time is catching up with him.
I mean, countless former Atleti players you can look at and it's like, oh, man, it is over. So, I'm not excited about the second Griezmann era. I really wasn't super excited about the end of his Atletico era, even though he was good, I guess. It was just really annoying.
Yeah. And the last team he was on, the 2018-19 team, will, like, forever be identified with what happened against Juventus, with that game in Turin. Like, that is what will continue to define that season forever. And that was not a particularly good team. Even though they finished second, they weren't very good. They weren't fun to watch. They collapsed in horribly embarrassing fashion in an early knockout round of the Champions League. And Griezmann left. They reset the team. And then they bring him back into it.
And they had some freaking horrible kits that year.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of any of those shirts, because they had, like, the baby blue and mustard yellow shirt they wore against Juve. That home shirt was kind of uninspiring.
It was bad.
The one next year, though, is downright atrocious.
The wiggly stripes?
Yes.
Yeah, those are bad.
Those are very bad. Like, I saw a FIFA mock-up of them today, and oh my lord.
Oh, they're bad.
No. Like the biggest problem is that there's two different sets of stripes. Like, on the chest and on the sleeves, they're the vertical stripes that Atleti have worn for generations. But on the collarbone, on the shoulders, they're hoops. They're horizontal stripes.
Pick Nike's one. Cooked, man.
Pick a design. Nike, I just want to talk. Turn on your location. I just want to talk.
Nike is so cooked. Oh, I mean, my actually, God. I loved the third kit this year, I will say. It was weird, but I liked it. Like, yeah, okay, same. That's fine. But, like, you don't have to be creative with the home shirt. Just do regular stripes. It's fine. It's not going to kill you. I know you want to do some crazy shit. just don't. Just don't. You know what was great about the 2013-14 home kits? They were normal.
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
and even when Nike did go a little adventurous, like on the 2017-18 home shirt, I really liked that home shirt. I know nobody else did, but I really liked it. I thought it was cool.
You did like that one.
Nobody did. It looked like they were like claw scratches along the red and white stripes, but I liked them. Little did I know Nike would get even worse from there. Little did I know that that was not the end of Nike's experimentation. Oh no, just the beginning. Look at the home shirt this year and next year.
And they also didn't try in like 15-16 and 16-17. Like, they were just like, here's like a navy and like a black away shirt. Like, cool.
The home shirts those two seasons were gorgeous. I still have my 16-17 home shirt in my closet.
That's a good one. Yeah. That is a good one. The last one. I actually liked the black and yellow shirt. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that interesting, but I didn't mind it.
Yeah, the Wiz Khalifa shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Atleti Steelers.
Oh, no. Nah. We are anti-Pittsburgh on this podcast.
Yeah, definitely, but Diego Simi, Mike Tomlin comp? What are you talking about?
Hey, based on longevity and consistency? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah. God, Tomlin's been there for a long time now.
Yeah, he has. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has.
I know Simeone's been here. This next year will be his 11th full season. He confirmed it on Sunday that he'll be coming back, which it's not really a surprise now, but earlier this season, it genuinely looked like, wow, he really might walk away. This seems pretty bad.
Yeah, I've kind of given up trying to figure it out because it seems like every year we have the same discussion about Simeone, and we did certainly in like the post-second Champions League season. We talked about it all the time, about what's going to happen with Simeone. And I don't know, man. I mean, could he stay manager of Atleti for, like, I don't know, a really long time? Sure, I believe it. Is he going to leave after next season? I'd also believe that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really know. I can't really get a pulse on it.
It's up to him, as it should be, because he's a great coach and a legendary figure in the club's history, and I'm happy he's staying. I'm glad he's staying, as are Enrique Sonetso and Miguel Angel Gil. Those two guys don't want him to leave. Like, as much as even the most ardent Cholo supporters and the most ardent Atletico fans who don't want him to leave, take their desire for Simeone to continue, multiply it by like 50, and then you'll get to Atletico's board. Of course, these guys don't want Cholo to leave. That's why they publicly backed him in January, February, March when things got really tough. Like, because Cholo absorbs all the criticism.
Yep.
When people on social media who watch Atletico three or four times a year criticize how they play, criticize their business in the transfer market, all that goes to Simeone.
Right.
The people who are really responsible for it aren't blamed. Cholo is.
Yeah, totally. I mean, some of the transfer stuff is on him, like for players he specifically requested. Most of them have been kind of shit. But a lot of the other stuff that's gone on has not been his fault as well. But you got to take the good and the bad with Simeone. It just kind of is what it is. And you'll, more often than not, you'll end up in the good.
I still believe that, you know, there's still a part of me that believes that Simeone can take us to these incredible heights. He already has in the past. And like this season, Atleti came so close to knocking out a great Manchester City team that is likely going to win the Premier League for the fourth time in 5 years this weekend.
And you feel like, given the Champions League heartbreaks that have happened over the years, is that, you know, if Atleti had won a Champions League, he would have been gone by now.
Probably.
I would think. And, you know, it's always been Inter has been like the destination for him, but Inter, you know, have gone from Conte and have been just fine. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know that they're going to be dying to bring in Simeone after Inzaghi's done so well there. I mean, I don't really see the point. So who knows? I mean, you could see a fit for Simeone in the Premier League, but I don't really see a big job opening up there anytime soon.
And he's not the kind of guy who would chase money.
No.
Like, I know his salary is the highest, or at least among the highest, of any manager in Europe. He's well paid and well compensated because he deserves to be. I cannot see him going to take over PSG. I cannot see him going to take over Man United or, you know, Arsenal at some point.
I don't see that. I don't see that either. I mean, you know, Simeone is one of those guys that, like, the feeling and the connection to the club really matters. And he's paid that much because of how valued he is as at Atleti.
Yeah.
And that would not be the case at basically any other team.
And
maybe Inter, and probably not even then.
Yeah, and he's got too large and extensive a track record to go coach Lazio.
Yeah, and they have kind of, you know, in this modern era, have kind of become like a middling to fringy Europa League club.
Yeah, that's not a consistent top four team.
No, it's not like they're competing for Serie A titles at this point. Like, they have good players, basically, but they're essentially like a fringy team.
Mm-hmm.
And their owners haven't shown a desire to really go out there and push the boat out, so I don't really see that happening either.
I don't know when he leaves. Like, it'll happen at some point, because everything ends at some point, but could I see him extending his contract even further beyond 2024? Yes, I could. Could I see him walking away at the end of next season? Yes, I could. Like, we are really in uncharted territory here. An Atleti manager has never lasted this long, and there are precious few managers in the modern era who last this long.
And, you know, I've thought about this a lot recently in kind of the wake of Klopp and Pep essentially sticking around with their clubs, because there was that period of time where it was kind of the general consensus that managers aren't going to stay places for a while anymore. Like, they're going to be like Jose Mourinho or like Carlo Ancelotti and hop around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is certainly still the case, but Pep and Klopp and Simeone have all been with the same club for a long time now. And seem to want to continue doing that. So maybe it's not a total changing of the guard. Maybe it's just we had to have a little period of craziness, and then, you know, these great managers will stick around with certain clubs, especially ones that they have a great connection to, like those three guys. Those are the ones that immediately come to mind. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, but actually probably not, because all the other clubs change managers all the time, so...
I think if Spurs had backed Pochettino in the market, Pochettino could have become that guy.
It's still crazy to me that they sacked him.
Yeah.
Still doesn't make any sense. And I hate Spurs, but Pochettino is the best manager in their history, and they sacked him after one half of a bad season. That's mad to me.
And, like, after just backing him in the market for the first time in, like, 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah, and... like, what, you're not going to get relegated, so fucking who cares? Like, have a bad season. I mean, unless some craziness had gone on internally, who knows? But, and then you hire Jose Mourinho. That was great. I loved that. but, yeah, it's crazy. And I like it, obviously, as an Arsenal fan and an Atleti fan, having a manager that you know what he's going to say in the press conference, you know how he's going to pick the team, you're not, like, guessing what's going to happen, you know what's going to happen with Simeone and with, for most of my life, Arsene Wenger. It's like, you know what's going to happen. You know what the deal is here. You don't have to guess. It makes your life a lot less stressful.
And,
you know?
And there's elation and also some frustration. Like, you and I have talked over the years about how Atleti's football is sometimes pretty limited. And some of the hits as well as the misses, the big misses in the transfer market. And just... some of these other, like, I think, I'm not sure how the best way to phrase this is, but especially with the way our culture is now, there's always a desire for more. There's always a desire for, like, if things go wrong, like, throw it all out, start anew, just blow it up and start anew. When that's not always the most prudent strategy, it's not always the best, most well-coordinated strategy. Like, that's a great point about Pep and Klopp, what they're doing in Premier League. Klopp just signed a new deal that'll keep him at Liverpool for, what, 12 years? Considering when he took over to when that new contract ends. And Guardiola will probably be there a decade if he wants to stay, and they will want him to stay.
Yep, there are rumors about an extension there as well, which I could see.
Yeah, so they're going to end up spending a decade on the touch lines unless things go really horribly, just miserably, terribly wrong. And I think the same thing would have to happen with Simeone, except Simeone is his position at Atletico is so well consolidated, and the board is so desperate not to see him leave. Yeah, they will be patient, just as they were this season, and we got a reward of sorts. We did end up getting top four. Hopefully it'll be third if Atleti beat Real Sociedad this weekend, which will not be an easy game, because La Real can still finish as high as fifth. That will be a challenge. But, you know, 10 consecutive years finishing somewhere in the top four, the 10 successive seasons of Champions League qualification is just mad, really, in any context. But for a club with Atletico's history, kind of this back-and-forth history with a couple of relegations, including one relatively recently at the end of the 90s, it's pretty wild. It's stability, even if it doesn't always feel like it. It's stability.
It is. And it's a lot. I mean, and, you know, you think about a club like Chelsea, who have had remarkable success in both European and domestic competition, but who's the manager you associate like most with Chelsea? Like, I guess it kind of depends.
Probably Mourinho,
right?
But that's over two short stints.
I mean, he sort of brought them into the four for which he shall never see heaven. but that all things being, they've had a million different managers, and they won the Champions League with Roberto Di Matteo.
Like, yeah, yes.
It's just not iconic in the same way, and I know that's like a very vague and not a tangible thing, but it just kind of feels different when it's your guy. Mm-hmm. You know, we know exactly what Simeone is gonna do. Like, it's like, oh, Atleti, you know, they're a great European team. I'm sure they're gonna play great football, says the person that's watched them twice over the last 7 years.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, no Champions League semifinal. No, we're playing horrible football.
Because it's the best way to win.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, man. It's nice to know what's coming. We're not getting caught off guard these days.
Yeah. And on kind of on top of that, Atleti this summer need to decide administratively what team they are. Do they want to challenge Madrid and Barca? Then you need to be aggressive and bold and make huge financial decisions in the summer. If you want to just hang out in the top three and the top four and stay a pace ahead of Sevilla, Betis, Villarreal, Athletic, okay, but that's not very fun. And like that seems to me what Berta and Cerezo and MAG are planning for this summer is not necessarily one with a lot of big, bold moves to try to take back the title. This summer, without sales especially, it seems to be one where they are happy to be in the top four. And there's a fundamental disconnect there, because they expect Simeone to achieve most every year. And like when Atleti win the league, it really is special, because at boardroom level, Atleti are pretty average with a very above average coach on the playing field.
Yep, agreed. I mean, I think, you know, you look at this Atleti squad and you don't see a big sale in there this summer.
Yeah, Carrasco or Lodi, to me, would be the big sale.
But, like, big sale? Like, I don't know. Like, a decent amount, but not, like, crazy.
Yeah, like, there's not going to be a 100 million euro exit this summer, which on one hand is good.
Sure.
It's good to – keeping the squad together is a good thing, but this squad, this year?
The only player you could say that would fetch that fee is Joao Felix, pretty much.
They're not letting him go on
another year, maybe, but not after this year.
Yeah, they're not letting him go anyway.
No,
like, but they're building the future around him.
Yeah. Like, so it's just not one.
I think if a good offer comes in for Kondogbia, they're going to evaluate it.
Like Jose Ma, probably.
Jose Ma won't leave, though. Given his roots, he won't
leave. Probably won't, and you wouldn't think he'd get an attractive enough offer to leave.
Yeah. And his release clause is far beyond what most teams would want to pay for him.
Sure.
Kondogbia, I think if they get something around $40 million, they're going to consider it, because that's almost quadrupling their money.
Yeah, and in a sense, pinching Jeffrey Kondogbia from Valencia when they were desperate to get rid of anything that wasn't nailed down,
which they still are,
is a good way of making profit. and they will make profit.
Yeah, because Valencia will, they will sell anyone for like 10 or 20 million.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that team is going to be real nasty business next year.
Oh, man. Yeah, I genuinely, I can't even laugh at them anymore. Because I genuinely feel bad for the diehard Valencia fans that I know and see on social media.
Yeah,
and totally. And the fans at Mestalla. I feel terrible for them.
Totally. I mean, and this is not the first time, obviously.
But if we're going to keep benefiting from it, I'm in favor of it.
Sure. A lot of clubs have benefited. Probably should have signed Danny Parejo. That would have been a good call.
Yeah, I'm still mad about that. Hopefully, yeah, we can make up for it if we sign Carlos Soler.
That'd be fine. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a weird summer. I feel like in my heart I would like to see a big shakeup happen, but I don't think that that's going to happen. I think they're going to keep the band together.
It doesn't seem like a big shakeup is going to happen, and it needs to happen, like, because this team this year was not good. There were serious issues, representative, emblematic of a team that needs to be restructured in some way, that needs to be overhauled, at least to some degree. Like, you can't just nibble around the edges or tweak it. Atleti need to be pretty bold this summer, and without big sales, it doesn't seem like they're going to be. And it's tough to square that with the reality that this team has been in the Champions League 10 years in a row. Like, make it make sense.
Right.
It doesn't always make sense.
It doesn't always make sense, although if you go back and you look at a lot of the high-profile transfers that have happened, you can see how the money has slowly leaked down the drain. But... yeah, I mean, it's a weird position to be in, and there's a lot of, like, players that you feel like, all right, they're okay, but then you keep looking, it's like, oh, the whole squad, with the exception of a few players, is a lot of guys who you only feel okay about.
Yeah, and that's a good point, too, is that when you spend 150 million combined euros on Costa, Morata, and Vitolo, like, that sets you back at least a year.
Yeah.
2 years, sure. Especially when you can't just paper over mistakes like state-run clubs can do, right? Manchester City and PSG and Madrid and Barcelona, even though they're not state-run, they can make mistakes and then go right back to the market. Like, Madrid have barely felt the Hazard transfer. It's criminal that they have barely felt that transfer. 95% of clubs would be crippled for years making that deal.
Yes.
You know, it's reality. This is the reality when you spend... / waste 150 million euros on three flops. This is the reality. You have to pinch pennies. And I think there are a lot of fans who don't quite get that if you make these big mistakes, you can't necessarily correct them when you don't have the funds of City, PSG, sure, even Newcastle now. We'll see what they do this summer. Yeah, I think the big one of Carrasco or Lodi, my sense is that one of them will leave. They'll probably shop Hermoso, try to get something for him because Simeone's not at all counting on him. I think they'll terminate Voss's contract because that just hasn't worked out.
Nope.
They will...
Hector Herrera will be gone.
I think they'll take preseason with Saul and see how he does. Maybe look to loan him out again or sell him. Morata will be on the block. They need to get rid of him to raise funds, and because none of the three parties involved really want Morata to be there.
Sure.
Like, yeah, so I don't know. It seems like there's not going to be a ton of big, flashy like moves this summer. Like, there's not going to be a lot of swagger to Atleti's transfer window. But we'll have to wait and see. The signings that they desperately, desperately need to make are a starting right back and a central midfielder. They got to sign those two players. Then after that, you can worry about reinforcing central defense, further reinforcing midfield with a more creative attacking player, and then you can worry about getting a flashy new forward like Lautaro or Darwin, although I don't think they're going to get either one.
Nah, I don't think so.
Which may be okay, depending on how you feel about Cunha's ceiling. Might be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't lose sleep about either. I mean, I think Darwin's kind of a wild card. I don't really know what he's going to end up being.
And you are on record, Rob, as being anti-Lautaro Martinez.
I mean, yeah, I don't think he's that good. But also, again, it's a fit thing. It's just the same mistake again. If you bring Lautaro in to with João Félix and Antoine Griezmann, it's like, all right, great, we're doing this again. We're doing the short strike second striker thing all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no thanks. Let's just get some good players and I don't know, see what happens. See if we can figure out what the hell happened in 2021. And
recapture.
Maybe Marcos Llorente could be good again. That would be nice.
Yeah, there's no way Llorente is this player again next year. But there's also, I think, a pretty remote possibility he's the player he was last year. Like, the real Llorente is somewhere in the middle.
Yes. I think that's fair.
He exploded last year. No one really expected it to happen. He just would score goals or assist him every other game. Like 23 goal contributions in 37 league games. He was just everywhere. Like, you looked up, boom, he was setting up a goal or scoring one. And this year it's been very different because the circumstances have been different. We haven't had a right back. There have been injuries. Llorente himself has missed multiple months with injuries. And it's just shot his confidence because there just hasn't been a whole lot of clarity.
Yep.
So, yeah, I back Llorente to bounce back, although I don't know how generous how I would be with that. I don't know how significant, how substantial a bounce back is going to be.
No, I think that's fair. I think if you're expecting him to be last year, then you're dreaming.
Yeah. I'm not sure we're going to see that player again. But if we get one that's like half that player, that's still immensely helpful.
And then basically the biggest question, as it always is next year the João Félix superstar year?
Yes.
Which it probably will be, yeah.
I'm a believer now. Watching how he played between February and the end of April, I'm a believer now. I think he's finally bought in. I think he was in the best form of his life before he got hurt again. And I think he's totally on board with what Chola wants him to do. He runs more. He presses harder. His role is clearer and more defined. He finally became a guy you can't drop from the starting 11, which is partially what got him injured.
Right.
But yeah, I think next year is the breakout. And that will... Our ceiling shoots way up if it is.
Yep.
Because he's that talented and that skilled. And if he puts it together for a full season... we're competing for trophies. I believe that.
It's as simple as that, folks.
Yeah, it's simple and totally healthy to hinge most of my hopes and dreams on a 22-year-old kid.
It's all fine. Everything's fine.
And on that note, you want to start recording?
Yeah, let's get started.
Yeah, that would have been funny, though, if we'd been talking for 85 minutes like we have and I hadn't pressed record.
That would be really unfortunate.
Yeah, funny might not be the right word.
Yeah. Yeah, just the damn it episode. That's it. That's just it.
Frequent and effusive curse words.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's over for 2 seconds and it's over.
Well, Rob, fortunately and thankfully, we have been recording for this entire time, so we are going to sign off now. Thank you very much for hopping on this Tuesday night edition of the pod.
Of course. Good job by you. A pleasure, as always.
This is probably going to go down as a top 5 Colts Neuro Chat episode.
Probably. It was very rambling, but that's what makes it good.
And, we have one more game this season, and then it's over. We get a 3-month break where we just get to talk about transfers mostly.
And yeah.
So we'll have another show coming your way over the weekend into early next week. Robbie Dunn may be back in action for that. In the meantime, thank you all for listening and for your continued support. This has been a pretty successful year, Colts Neuro Chat's most successful season since we started the show back in 2016. Keep up with us on social media at Into the Calderon and on our website, intothecalderon.com. Also, patreon.com/ColtsNeuroChat for bonus goodies and exclusive content. You can also subscribe to listen to previous episodes of this wonderful podcast and our sister show, the Partido a Partido Pod, on Spotify, the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network. Subscribe there. And we will Colts Neuro Chat with you again next week. Adios.